Yesterday we had a long discussion about Shnosov Shal Yaakov to try to calculate the years. And in this calculation, we found that when Yaakov appears bifnei Paro, and Paro asks him how old he is, and Yaakov Avinu's response that he's 130, correct?
Right.
And it doesn't really calculate, and therefore there's a missing 14 years. And the Gemara says that, and quotes a brisa to support this, that those 14 years were the years that Yaakov was in Beis Aver, and he was studying Torah in that Beis Medrash. And during this period of time, it says that Aver was still alive after Yaakov left the Beis Medrash, but he died shortly afterwards. When Yaakov Avinu went down to Aram Naharaim, to the Beis Lavan, and he was there for 2 years, the first 2 years, when Aver died. So Yaakov, at the time of the death of Aver, was 79 years old. And when he left the Beis Medrash of Aver, he came to Aram Naharaim, and there he meets Rachel on the Be'er. At that point he is 77 years old. So now the Gemara asks, this is where we stopped yesterday, Minolin Delo Mi'enish. How do we know that Yaakov was not punished for those 14 years that he was in Beis Aver? Because the whole derivation that Talmud Torah trumps Kibbutz Avayim is based on the assumption that there was no punishment to Yaakov Avinu. He had every right to give priority to Talmud Torah and learn in the yeshiva of Aver, even at the expense of Kibbutz Avayim. So in order to prove that in fact Yaakov Avinu was not punished for those 14 years of Beis Aver, Desanya, we quote a brisa. And the brisa says the following: Nimtza, Yaakov Avinu was punished for a period of 22 years, during which he was not mechaved his father, his parents. Now, those 22 years are made up of two numbers. There's 20 years that he was in Beis Lavan, and there's going to be an extra 2 years, which the Gemara is going to try to figure out what Yaakov was doing during those extra 2 years, when he wasn't back in his father's house. But the total number is 22. And that number 22, the years in which Yaakov was not around to be mechaved his father, corresponds to the 22 years that Yosef is away from his father. He's down in Mitzrayim. Now let's calculate. How do we get the 22 number for Yosef? Yosef Shapirish May Aviv, Yaakov is going to suffer for Esri Vishtaim Shavat 22 years, until finally Yaakov comes down to Mitzrayim. Now, to get this calculation of 22 years, we start with the fact that the Torah says that Yosef Ben Shvaisre Shana Hayroes Echav Batson. So there was, clearly he was 17 years old at that time, because that's when he was sold by his brothers, when he was sent by his father to find his brothers. Now, when he becomes appointed as the viceroy of Mitzrayim, he's 30 years old, because the Pasuk says, V'yosef ben shloshim shana ba'amdo lefnei paro, which means that from the time he was pirish mi'aviv, which is at the age of 17, until he comes in front of paro, is a 13-year period, between 17 and 30. And those are the 13 years that calculate the first variable in this equation. Now, when did Yaakov actually come down to Mitzrayim, there were 7 years of Sova, there were 2 years of Ra'av. And if you calculate that, that 7 and 2 is 9. Add that to the 13. And you get 22. So this is all in Rashi. So Yaakov is without his son Yosef for 22 years. Is K'shem Sheperish Yaakov Aviv, Yaakovinu May Aviv, just as Yaakovinu was away from his father for 22 years, that and causing his father that tsar, so too Yosef is away from Yaakov for 22 years, causing Yaakov tsar. Now, here's the question that we want to ask on this Braisa. Is it really true that the exact number of years that Yaakov is away from his father is 22 years? The Gemara asks, Talsin Vishita Havyon. In fact, it's 36 years. Why? Because to the 22 years, we have to add 14 years that he was in Shem V'Yevir. So if you add 22 and 14, you end up with 36. And the only answer to this enigma would have to be the assumption that the 14 years that he's in Beis Eved is not calculated in terms of how long he, Yaakov, was away from his father. Ella, our Beisar, Dehavi beBeis Eved lo chashev lehu, because what we're trying to calculate are the years that Yaakov was away from his father for which he would be punished. And the 14 years that he's in Beis Eved and he's away from his father's house are not years that are punishable because Talmud Torah trumps Kibbutz Av. But now the Gemara is bothered. If you are going to subtract 14 years for which he's not punished, you're still not going to end up with the number 22 years. Why? Because sof the Beis Lavan, Yaakov Avinu is in Beis Lavan for a total of 20 years. Esrim Shnin Havyon. In other words, he works for 14 years for Rachel Leah, and then after he marries Rachel, he remains in Beis Lavan for an additional 6 years. So 6 plus 14 is 20. How did you jack up the number to 22 to say that he'll be punished over his avelus of Yosef is 22 years because he was away for 22 years? You subtracted the 14 years b'shem ve'ever. Ella says the Gemara, Mishum de ishtohi, he procrastinated, he delayed, b'orchon is on the road, tartin shnin, for 2 full years. He was this Akev Shnatayim Baderech on his way back from Aram to come to his father's house. And we have to figure out what he was doing during those 2 years and why he was Misakev. But first let's see, how does the Gemara derive this conclusion that Yaakov delayed another 2 years on his way back from Aram Narayim Baderech? Design him because we have a braisa. Yotza me'aram narayim. Yaakov leaves Aram Narayim. He leaves Beis Lavan. He's on his way to Beis Aviv. Ubalo l'sukos. And he comes to a place which he called Sukos. And why is it called Sukos? V'asa sham shmones chodesh. And emar v'yaakov nasa sukosa. V'yiven lo bayis u'mikneu asa sukos. Now, Yaakov comes to a place called Sukkos. How long does he remain in Sukkos? The Braisa says 18 months. How does the Braisa know that is the exact period of time, 18 months? And then we're going to add another 6 months in just a minute. And it's derived from this pasuk, V'Yaakov nasa Sukkosa, V'Yivim lo Bayis. Now Bayis is the place where he lives, where human beings live, his whole family, and that's in Lashon Yachid. But l'mikneu asa sukos. The word sukos is in Lashon Rabin. Now, what period of time does the sukos function? When is it necessary to have these sukos? And the answer is the following. A bayis is absolutely necessary during the cold period of time, which is a winter of 6 months. On the other hand, the sukkah is constructed for the Yemei HaKayitz, because it's too hot in the house. They go out to the sukkah, and there they get a little bit more comfort. Now, the Yemei HaKayitz, when you live in the sukkah, is 6 months. However, Bais, as we said before, is B'loshin Yochid. Sukkos is B'loshin Rabin. So it must be that Yaakov Avinu was Misakev one Kayetz, one Choref, and then another Kayetz. And during the winter months, he had these sukkos for the Mikneh, you know, for the animals. And the human beings were in the Bais. But during these two summer months, one before the Choref, one after the Choref, his family went out to Sukkos. So if we add the 6 months of Kayetz to the 6 months of Choref to the following 6 months of Kayetz, we end up with the number 18 months. Now, how do we jack that up to 2 years? And the answer is, B'Beisel, even after this period of time in Sukkos, he goes to Beisel. And how long was he in Beisel? Asa Shisha Chadashim. He was there for 6 additional months. Now, in the footnote, he says that this period of time when he was in Beisel of 6 months, Yaakov Avinu experienced quite a few different episodes in his life. For example, on his way from Sukkos to Shechem, there was the Maisa Shechem. Then there was a whole parasha of Netiyas Oholim. And then he brings the Karbonos, and then he has the dream. And all this happens during that period of time. And the question is, why is the Gemara going to focus our attention, single out, the Hikriv Zvachim? Those are the last two words in our parak. After all, a lot goes on here during that 6 month period. And the answer is because the Chiddush is that even though Yaakov Avinu during this period of time was Makriv Zvachim, which is certainly a great mitzvah, nevertheless, he's going to be punished because he didn't come back to his father and mother's house. And if you add the 6 months in Beisel to the 18 months in Sukkos, you end up with 2 years. And those 2 years, in addition to the 20 years that he was in Beis Lavan, comprise the 22 years for which he's punished, and Yosef is not to be with his father for 22 years. Now, I was curious to know, why is it that Yaakov is misake for these 2 extra years, and then he gets punished for that? The whole episode is a bit strange, and I found the following. In the Yalkut Habirim, he quotes a Medrash Rabbah that the reason why Yaakov was hesitating to come back to his father, and therefore he was misake b'derech, is because of Esav. He was afraid of Esav. And during this period of time, he prepares matanos, doronos, for covered for Esav. So I'll read to you the language of the Medrash. Yaakov is aki bederv mishum shayatorud l'shloach li Esav es hadoron shehechen lo v'sirev l'kablo. In the meantime, Esav is not willing to accept these gifts. The Omar Abrechya Kol Osom Chadoshim Shosa Yaakov HaYimachavet Is Esav B'Doron. So there are a few things here that I left. Now, if you take a look in the commentary on the Medrash, which is called the Yifas Toar, he writes, Mishum Shahoya Olav HaChov, he felt the weight of a debt, so to speak, L'Chavet Is Esav B'Doronos Ki Hoya Yorei Mimenu Pen Yoshiv Olav Shenis. He was afraid that Esav would come back and attack him a second time. V'chein kasev haramban shebemesha tkufa zu ha'yakov yorem be'esav u'mishalech lo ki oso adorn b'chol chodesh v'chodesh u'pamachas b'shana, either monthly or annually he sent these gifts. And this is all l'chvod Esav. Now, the only thing I can make out of this, because again, these 2 years are added to the punishable years, is that maybe what's implicit here, and again, I wish I would see something more explicit, maybe you'll find something in your commentaries, that maybe Yaakov is taken to task because he should have had more of a midah of bitachon. Instead of doing all this ishtadlus to try to calm down Esav and protect himself against Esav by sending him Doronos, instead of preferring kvod Esav over kvod Aviv Imahu, he should have had more bitachon. I don't know. I'm afraid to say such a thing because, but on the other hand, we're saying that he was punished for those 2 extra years.
I'm not saying anything.
Nothing? Alright. Hadron Alecha Megillah Nikres. And then we're up to Hakoryas HaMegillah. Now, before we start the new parak, I would like to go back to the Agadatum, because this is a seum not only on the first parak, but also on the Agadatum, which I think we've been learning for about a month. I don't know how long. I can't remember.
6 weeks.
6 weeks. So I wanted to add something to the Agadatum, and even if it means, you know, it'll take us 15-20 minutes, I think it's worthwhile, because I found something of significance that I didn't know about, and maybe for you also it'll be new, it'll be a chiddush. Open up for a minute to the Agadatan Daf Yud Dalid. At the very top of the page, the Agadatan really starts on the last line on Yud Gimel Amud Beis, which the Gemara quotes a pasuk in Megillas Esther. You remember that Haman is asking Achashverosh Imamelech Tov Yikasev Li Abdom, will send out the decree to destroy the Jewish people, and Haman adds a little bit of a bribe, Yaseres Alafim Kesef Kikar Kesef Eshkol Yideosi Amalach Lahavi Al Ginze Amelach. So Vayomer Amelach Lahaman, a Kesef Nasun Lach, you can keep the money, thanks but no thanks. But as far as your desire to destroy the Jewish people, La Sospo Kitov Beinech, you have my license, go ahead with your plan. Om Rabbi Abba. So take a look at the Gemara, which you'll recall on the top of Yudalit Omanal. Moshal Yachashverish the Haman. And this whole Moshal, which the Gemara presents here, is essentially to transmit to us the, shall I say, the heavy hatred of Achashverosh for Klal Yisrael. And how do we see that demonstrated by this metaphor? So without going through the entire thing inside, because I really want to get to the Ein Yosef on this, but what happens is you have two neighbors. One has a tail, which is an Aremas offer, so he's got this heap of dirt. And the other one, his next door neighbor, has a charitz, he has a hole. Neither one of them are very happy. Probably the Baal HaTel is feeling that he can't do his farming, agricultural work because of this tail. And on the other hand, the Baal HaCharitz feels that people, or his rake, his machresha, his plow is falling into the charitz.
Well, he's got a hole in his...
He's got a hole. So he wants to get rid of the hole.
His property, he wants to fill it.
So the owner of the tail, which you'll soon see is in the Nimshal of Achashverosh, He's willing, he declares, at least in his mind, that if he would find someone with a charitz where he could dump all this, you know, the whole tail into, he would be very, very happy. Because he wants to be what's called mashve pnei akark. He wants to flatten out his land. Who would offer me this charitz and I'll pay him for it? And what happened was, the owner of the charitz was also wondering who would give him a tail so he could dump it into the charitz and fill that up, or what do we call a landfill? Is that what
landfill,
it's called?
Yeah, landfill.
And I'll be willing to pay for that. So Liyomen is at the end, they met each other. So the Baal HaCharitz, who in the Nimshal is going to be Haman, turns to the owner of the tail and he says, you know what, I'm willing to pay you for your tail, because I needed to fill up my charit. So the Baal HaTeil says, take it for free. Mm-hmm. Halavai, you should take it away, because
you're doing me a favor.
You're doing me a favor. I want to get rid of my tail.
Yeah.
And here in the Nimshal, Haman wants to pay Achashverosh to take away the tail, and Achashverosh says, HaKesef Nosun Loch. I'd be willing to pay you to take away the tail and give me your charit so I can dump it into your tail. So this all indicates that Haman and Ahasuerus both had the same vested interest and eagerness to kill the Jewish people. Now, what I have here is the Anaf Yosef, one of the super commentaries on Agadata, and he wants to answer the following question. The Jewish people, and again, both Ahasuerosh and Haman, each one respectively wants to get rid of them. In the eyes of Ahasuerosh, the Jewish people in the Moshel are compared to a tail. In the eyes of Haman, the Jewish people are compared to a charitz. Why is that so? Now, again, I think it's a very clever question that I wouldn't even have the chutzpah to ask the question, even if I thought of the question, because how are you going to come up with an answer? So I thought this was very...
And how can you compare to both? But anyways,
I thought this was very brilliant.
Yeah, okay, but I hear the question.
So he says the following. There's a fundamental difference between the hatred of Ahasuerus for the Jewish people and the hatred of Haman for the Jewish people.
Yeah.
From Ahasuerus' point of view, and I'll read to you the Hebrew so you'll get more of a flavor of why the Jews from Ahasuerus are called a tail, like this heap.
Yeah.
Nechshavu etz Achashverosh haYehudim bigodel hamala. Achashverosh, and we see it over and over again, has a certain awe about the Jewish people. Yeah. He thinks that God punishes those who punish the Jewish people, and so forth and so on. So the hatred of Achashverosh is what we call kina, jealousy. He doesn't want to tolerate in his malchus a people who are on such a high level, shemizgoyim olav, they are sort of lorded over him. Because at the end of the day, it's ani efes, it's as if I'm nothing compared to the Jewish people.
Right.
This is what we call the jealousy of the Jewish people. Many, many of the sociologists who try to explain away anti-Semitism, this is one of the approaches. There are many other approaches and answers the question why they hate us.
Yeah.
But one is that they're jealous of us. Now, he says that Achashverosh lo rotza, he didn't want you, anoshim chashuvim, who are more chashuv than he is, and than his people are, the superior nation. Lakach, hayu hayehudim be'edav kamo tel. Tel is something that's gavoh, it's high up above the ground. And it bothers you that there's something sticking up above the ground that's higher than the rest of the ground. Haman, that's Amalek. That's the exact opposite. Haman speaks Lashon Hara about the Jewish people. How different they are. How low they are. Hem shfeilim v'nivzim ma'od. And therefore, he turns to Achashverosh and he says the following. La melech ein shovel hanicham. It's not worth keeping them around. Am mefuzer meforot. He starts being mezalzel in Klal Yisrael. These are low people. You know, these are subhumans, you know, if you talk in Nazi terminology, right? Lefichach, therefore the mashal for the Jewish people in the eyes of Haman is that of a charitz. A charitz is subterranean. It's amok v'shafel. It's underneath the surface of the karka. The Jews are shvelim. They're low. And if this be the case, says the Anaf Yosef, we understand Haman's reaction when, you remember when Mordechai refuses to bow down to Haman. It says, "Vayives bi'edov lishloch yad b'Mordechai levado ki higidu lo es am Mordechai." The Yehudim, the Jews, in the eyes of Haman are so low that to kill one Jew, it's like killing a fly when you're infested with flies. And therefore, if I'm going to accomplish something and get rid of this one shafel, that's nothing. I want to get rid of all of them. And then he says the following. when Haman begins his approach to Achashverosh and he says, let's get rid of the Jews, then the Gemara says, that's back on Yud Gimel Amud Beis, the previous Amud, that Achashverosh responds that he's afraid of the God of Israel, because the God of Israel takes punishment and avenges the Sonam Shal Yisrael. And Haman responds to B'divei Zilzul. He says, they Yishenim in HaMitzvahs. Don't worry about them. They're not such religious people. Their God is not going to protect them. You won't be punished. But you see very clearly that Achashverosh's hatred for the Jewish people is based on his awe, so to speak, of the Jewish people. He was machsh of them, like the tail that's kavod.
But he knows what happened to the guys previous to him.
Correct. Yeah, the Belshazzar, the whole crew.
He knows where they're going.
Correct.
He says, if I don't do something fast,
okay,
I'm in for it too. And he just had the Kalim out. He knew.
Right.
You know, he took 7 years and he took out the Kalim. He knows.
Now, the Chasam Sofer adds another point. It's almost a totally different perspective, but again, to try to answer why Achashverosh sees the Jewish people like a tail and Haman like a charitz, and he says the following. He says that Achashverosh's plan was a whole different plan. He also wanted to get rid of the Jewish people. But what was his plan? He says, I'm going to lift up the Jewish people. I'm going to bestow upon them and shower upon them goodness, until at some point they're going to become so assimilated amongst our people, all our different pluralistic society. Yes, arvu bagoyim. Therefore, Achashverosh sets up a banquet, and he specifically invites the Jewish people ishtatev bo. He's mechabed them. He tells them to eat and drink. He gives them whatever they want, and all this is to integrate them into society. This is the different part of Golus. This is the Golus that's so great that the Jews feel, you know, let's marry the goyim. Well, what's the between me and my next door neighbor? Lumaso, in contrast, Haman wanted to destroy the Jewish people, get rid of them in one day. He now compares the Jewish people to the charitz, you know, like bury them underground in one day. Rotzel Ashpilam. He doesn't want to bestow goodness on them. He's not in the long-range plan, you know, let's get them assimilated. Haman wants immediate annihilation of the Jewish people. He wants not lahagbiyam ulechabdam, like a tail, but on the contrary, lashpilam uliavdam. And now he adds a third explanation. This is the Beis Yitzchak. I'm not sure if that's Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan. In any event, he says the following. That as far as Achashverosh is concerned, the Jews were just miutarim. They were unnecessary. Mafriim. Sometimes they bother us. But he didn't have the hope, he didn't have the plan or the dream that if he kills them, the situation would necessarily improve. V'yizke l'gdula yosef mikodem, that he'll be a greater king, and it'll, uplift him even further. Therefore, he compares the Jewish people to a tail. A tail, a heap of dirt in a field, is miutar, it's completely unnecessary. And mafriya, it's not only superfluous, but it also disturbs us. But you realize that even if you get rid of the tail, well, all that you gain from it is just getting rid of the tail. And it won't be mafriya, it won't bother you in the sadat. Haman, on the other hand, understands something much more profound about the Jewish people. You remember the pasuk, ula'om mila'om yematz. If I'm not mistaken, that's the bracha of Yaakov to Esau. And what does that mean? Chazal say it means kishezek kom zen nofel. Now again, did Haman actually study in yeshiva that he knew this? But he probably intuited that Amalek historically is antithetical to Klai. So there's an ongoing battle, and either this one wins or the other one wins. And therefore, his tikva, in other words, what his plan was, Haman, was sheyashmin es kol Yehudim, and the benefits here are going to be great. Because when they go down to the tachlis hatefila, yakum hu v'yale v'tachlis haliyah. And therefore, it's not just like Achashverosh says, you know what, this is an extra column here, let's just get rid of them, they bother us, it's like a mosquito in my ear. But Achashverosh realizes that even if we get rid of them, there's no great benefit. But from Haman's part, the stakes are really high, because kishazeh nofel zeh kam. And therefore, we find that Haman is willing to pay a great sum of money for the rights to destroy the Jewish people. Achashverosh is not willing is not willing to do that. But Haman realized what the great toelis would be if we destroy the Jewish people. And therefore, his kavana, his intent, was to destroy the Jewish people. Achen, Haman nimshal lebala charitz. Haman is like the one who owns the charitz. Shetzarech afar, he needs desperately ground or soil. Lemalei asacharitz, haynu sheyesh lo shimush bi'etzem ha'afar. It's not just get rid of something, but rather he wants the afar. He has an inherent use in the afar, which fills up his chafira. Maybe he could say even more that now if he flattens the land, he's going to plant, I don't know.
It's a productive use.
A productive use.
It adds value for him.
Exactly, it adds value. Chen choshav haman lismali michisronom unfilosom shal Yisrael. Now, if you enjoyed that, which I hope you did, I was like mamish this fall. I mean, the whole question here, you know, that Achashverosh calls the Jewish people a tail in this mashal nimshal in Haman or Chritz. I mean, I never would have touched it with a 10-foot pole. So I'm very excited about the creativity here. But I have something I think even more, perhaps even more exciting. And this is an analysis of the Iyun Yaakov. The Iyun Yaakov again is one of the super commentaries on the Agadata, and he asks the fear kashas. He's got four questions and he wants to answer them all in one fell swoop. Number one, Achashverosh says HaKesef Nosun Loch. It sounds like Achashverosh is holding on to the money, the Aseres Salafim Kikers, and he's giving it to Haman. That doesn't make any sense. How can it be that he's giving back money when it wasn't even given to him yet? Question number two. In the Igeres that Haman writes, Lahashmid Laharu Glabed is called Yehudu, it says Ushlolom Lavos. So in other words, in the sequence here, it starts with the annihilation of the Jewish people, and then in the aftermath of the annihilation, then we get their possessions. Now, Haman is really not living up to the mandate of Achashverosh, because Achashverosh said to him that I'm going to give you the okay to destroy the Jewish people. But he never gave Haman the right to take away and confiscate their possessions. So Haman is really going beyond his
mandate.
Excellent. Question number three. Esther says to Achashverosh, Ilu lavadim
ushvachos nimkarnu. English language, that's very good.
Well, what's going on? Did I miss something?
Yeah, I was just complimenting Moshe on his remembering the English language.
Yeah. You're right. It's a good man. We're going to miss you. Yeah. Okay.
I miss you too, Eric. I miss you more.
Okay. So here's question number three. Hester says, Ilu avadimu shvachot nimkarnu hechrashti ki ein hatzar shove b'nezek hamelech. In other words, she's implying that Haman is trying to, what his plan is going to create a harm, is going to be a nezek for the king. Mao ha-nezek, he asks, the Ein Yaakov. What is the loss here to King Achashverosh if they destroy the Jewish people? And finally, Achashverosh's response is, Mihu zev hezehu abshel mola'oli bolasos kein. He himself was the one who gave the okay, the license to wipe out the Jewish people. So what is he saying? Mihu zev, you know, v'ezehu asher mola'oli bo. What about him himself?
Right.
So the Yaakov comes up with a new thesis here. He says the following. That the intention of Achashverosh was to go step by step. In other words, he didn't believe that we could just simply wipe out the Jewish people, zbang, and that's it. Why? He thought that we should start with a lower flame decree against the Jewish people. Let's, you know what, as you say, Haman, the Jewish people are not behaving properly. Haman accused them, you know, if the fly falls in, they'll take out the fly, but if Achashverosh himself would touch the wine, they'll spill out the wine, and other accusations that they're, you know, they're subversive, you know, this is a very dangerous people, etc., etc. So Achashverosh says, you know what, let's give them a chance. Let's give the Jewish, let's start with a low flame gzera, on onesh kal with a kuf, right, kal, v'nigzar al rechusham. Let's start by I don't know if it means confiscating their possessions or whatever it might mean, or taxing them, some sort of financial punishment. And then let's see how the Jewish people respond. Will they shape up? We'll see. Now they became loyal citizens. They don't want to be punished again. They got the message. Let's let them go. Then he gives Haman the green light to go ahead to the final solution. And that's what he says to Haman. Ha kesef nosen loch. This is not the kesef that Haman was offering the Aseres Aloh from Kikar Zov, because that but ha kesef nosen loch means the people, the money or the possessions of the Jewish people are yours. Go ahead and start confiscating their money. And if, as a result of that, of confiscating Jewish money, they would mend their ways, then let's stop there. Kasvan shal Yehudim nosen loch miyad levozeis es mamon. V'achakach, im adayin lo itivu es darkom, then ha'om lasos bo kitom b'necha, will go on to stage B, the annihilation of the Jewish people, kirtzonch as you want, Haman. Haman is not willing to do that. Why? He wants to destroy the Jewish people immediately. He doesn't want to start with a shlav aleph, you know, a certain punishment of mamon,
yeah.
Because maybe at the end of the day they'll show the king that they're loyal citizens, and then his machshava, his plan, will not come to fruition. Therefore, he changes around the seder, and he figures he'll get away with it. He'll say lahashmin laraglabed, and then ushlolam lavos. We'll get to that moment after we destroy them, but we have to immediately destroy them.
Right.
Now, Chazal have a statement. I don't think we saw it here in Masechta Megillah, so I don't remember where it is. Anyway, this is a famous statement of Chazal. Kol ha-meitzar li-Yisrael, those enemies who cause anguish to the Jewish people, they oppress the Jewish people, nasa l'rosh, they become the leaders. What is it all about? So the Ein Yaakov says the following. Hametzar, that's the language of the Gemara, they oppress the Jewish people. That's a lower level Rasha. There are two categories of Rashoim. One Rasha is called the Metzar. He oppresses the Jewish people. He doesn't destroy the Jewish people. He wants to cause the Jewish people to mend their ways for whatever reason. Again, he's not L'shem Shamayim, he's a Rasha. But ultimately, listen to this unbelievable, this again, if on a philosophical level, this requires a lot of thinking, but he says, ultimately, this Rasha, who's the Meitzar, right, we're not up to the real Rasha yet, but the Meitzar, the lower flame Rasha, is a conduit from HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a divine plan to bring about the tshuva of Klal Yisrael. And as a result, we got to pay him up. In this world, he's got to get some reward. And therefore, Nasa L'Rosh. He becomes a leader amongst the Goyim. Avol, but now there's a second level of a Rosh, a much more profound extreme. Shehu Ma'abed Es Yisrael L'Gamri Min Ha'Olam. He just wants to destroy the Jewish people. He is not in any way playing the role as a conduit to bring about tshuva. And therefore, he has no merits whatsoever. Ein lo shum gedulu schar, el adraba, nenash kach min ha-shamayim. Therefore, Esther turns to Achashverosh. Ilu lavadimu shvachot nimkarnu. If you were just going to punish us as a meitzar, meaning, cause us this terrible shiflus of being avodim in shvachos, hechrashti, you know what? Maybe this is a divine plan, and it's meant to bring the Jewish people to do tshuva. Aval now, nimkarnu lahashmid laharug la'aved, total destruction. You know what, Achashverosh? You're not going to benefit from this at all. Ein hatzar shoveh benezek hamilah. Because if the gzera is going to be total annihilation, then we don't apply the principle of Nasa L'Rosh. You will not be elevated at all as a result of the annihilation of the Jewish people. And Achashverosh answers, Mi hu zeh ve'ezahu asher melo libo lasos king. Who switched around the sequence of my gzera? I only said that we should take the moment of the Jewish people. and then we'll get to the goof if they don't do tshuva. But Haman was the one who switched around the order, and he's causing a terrible deficit to me, a harm to me, because as a result, if it's the gzera of annihilation, boom, that's going to be a terrible onish, and I'm participating in that. When Mordechai hears about the gzera of Haman originally, that Haman got very smart, and he said, you know what, we're not going to mess around with the rechush, but we're going to immediately destroy the Jewish people. Mordechai realized that we're in deep, deep trouble, because we have a very, very little time, very little opportunity to do tshuva. So what's Haman's response? Haman yotze l'rechov ha'ir, he goes out publicly, v'zak za'aka gedola umara. He says the only way we could possibly have a chance to undermine the gzeir of Haman is if we wake up, we arouse the Jewish people to do tshuva immediately. There's no time here for a long extended process, because Haman is going for the, in Yiddish you call it gergel, how do you say it?
The jugular vein.
Says the Yin Yaakov, if this be the case, then let's understand the Nusach of Al HaNisim that we recited benching on Purim. V'ata barachamecha rabim hafarta satsoso v'eshaftalo gmulo berosho. This is what we call mida keneged mida. V'tolu oso v'ezbonov al ha'etz. Again, another chiddush of the Ein Yaakov. He says the following. Haman's plan was, let's not give the Jewish people an opportunity to do tshuva. Let's immediately decree that they be annihilated. And that's not usually the way the king would deal with the fifth column. First, he would go slowly and be pogeh berechush, and then benefesh. HaKadosh Baruch Hu hefer asat soso, and instead asu Yisrael tshuva. Kilkulu es machshavta. His whole machshav, his whole purpose, Haman, was not to give the Jews an opportunity to tshuva. And yet Hashem, with His help, gave the Jews an opportunity to tshuva. Hey, shavta gmul barosho. This is mida keneged mida. And why is that? He says the following. That normally, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes someone, okay, I get a little emotional about this, he starts punishing them, a person, by things that happen to their children. HaKadosh Baruch Hu shinas ha-seder, just like you, Haman, changed the seder of the Malchus. Therefore, kach shino lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu ha-seder, v'kodem harag es Haman atzmo, v'rak acher kach es bono. So again, let's go back to the Al HaNisim. V'tolu oso v'ezbonov al ha'etz. The sequence here is critical. First, Haman is put to death, and then his children. Shelo kibidas HaKadosh Baruch Hu shekodem first manish bibonim v'achakach b'misas atzmo. Yeah. Rabbo said there are like 16 different fidushim in this one parable. I mean, I get chills from it. Just the creative mind of the Jewish nation. It's like, I would have given him a PhD just for this. You know what I'm saying?
The interesting thing is,
you know, I'm very hot on this. Don't pour some cold water on the fire. No,
But Achashverus, if his plan went forward, would we have made tshuva? Because then there's right after this discussion of the tel and the charitz is the thing, you know, by Yasar HaMelech et Tabato, and then they say that was greater than all of the Arba'im Shmona Nevi'im, right? That was that one act, in other words, by making it an immediate threat of death, that was what got tshuva, but made everyone suddenly do tshuva.
Well, so you know what? It depends on how you learn Hasara Satabas, meaning, do you look at it from the ultimate end result, meaning that Haman immediately said, let's annihilate Jewish people, or is Hasar's Tabas from the perspective of Achashverosh? You know, I'm giving you my Tabas, but I want you to go through this plan one after the other. And it could be that maybe Klal Yisrael would have done tshuva, I don't know. But at the end, you're right. You know, the Tachlis at Bashetach, as we say, you know, why did they do tshuva? It's because of the annihilation, you know, and Mordechai was so nervous about this. But, you know, to put this whole thing into perspective, according to Yaakov, that Ahasuerus wanted to give the Jewish people, you know, if you talk about the Gaon that we mentioned more than once, that the word Melech in the Megillah is an allusion to the Melech Malchim Lochim, And there are two levels that we read the Megillah. You know, one is the actual physical beings and what they're thinking, and then there's the divine plan. We've seen over and over again that we read the words that come out of somebody's mouth from a divine perspective, which all. So Ahasuerus is saying, you know what? Hakesef nosulah. And Akash Baruch is saying, you know what? Ahasuerus, you're okay. Why? Because you're a lower level Russia. You want to give the Jews an opportunity to do tshuva. That was HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But Haman stepped up to the plate and he intervened and he said, no, let's rob the opportunity from the Jewish people.
I can actually answer my own question because by the king's involvement, it could have been perhaps without Ahasuerus there, Haman, because they gave us a year to repent. I mean, right? There was, if there wasn't any time, if you just said, you know what, tomorrow let's go out and kill the Jews, there would have been no time to repent.
That's right. And then Mordechai would have been in deep trouble.
Right, so he had to, so because of Ahasuerus, he had to give this to, he had to choose a date and everything and make a decree. And so this was, it was because of the king that he had that we had the time.
Right, but also Haman also had his own fears of killing the Jewish people. He had to time it just so. He knew that, what month can we not
So that's the last thing I want. You know, we have 5 more minutes and I got it, and then believe me, on Sunday again, gentlemen, you won't be here, but we're going to start halacha. We're going back to now the beginning of the second paragraph. There's an unbelievable diuk here in the language of the Brice on Daf Yud Gimel Amid Beis. Why was Haman thrilled as a result of the poor, like the lottery, that fell out in Chodesh Adar? And there's a diuk here that, again, I must admit, I missed the boat here. I didn't read the Gemara. I've heard of this Gemara since I'm a kid, but I never read it.
Right.
Listen to the language. It says, Kevet Shenof Al Pur, Bechodesh Adar, Samach Simcha Gedol, Amar. Nafali Pur Biyerech Shemespo Moshe, because Moshe Rabbeinu presumably is going to die in the month of Adar. And listen to the next line. This I missed. V'lo Yodea Shebeshiva Bi Adar Mes.
He didn't know.
Wait a minute. This whole line is completely. Not only is it superfluous and unnecessary, it even undermines the whole theory over here. Ubeshiva v'adar nola. Now wait a second. Why don't you just tell me that, number one, Haman was glad, he was happy later because this is the month in which Moshe died, and number two, he was unaware of the fact that on the 7th of Adar Moshe was born. What is this business here? V'loha yodea shebeshiva v'adar meis. What's that all about? He didn't know that Moshe died on the 7th of Adar. So he writes here the following: Hikshom Afarshim, Madua Amra Gemara Shloha Yodea Haman Shebezayin Adar Meis Moshe Haloa Ikerhu Shloha Yodea Shebezayin Adar Nolad Moshe. He didn't know that this was an auspicious month, because he didn't realize that this was the month in which Moshe was born. Why do you have to tell me a whole shtickel Torah, a whole maisa here, that he didn't know that on the 7th Adar Moshe died? Adarava, Kaven Sheyada Moshe may be out of design Adar. If you would have told me he knew that Moshe died on the 7th of Adar, that would certainly explain his Simcha Gedola. So here he quotes a sefer called the Beis Levi. I seem to recall this sefer, I forgot the name of the author. I have his book on Hilchos Talmud Torah. And he writes the following. The Goral came out on the 13th of Adar, not on the 7th Adar, which was the day in which Moshe Rabbeinu died. Nevertheless, Haman was elated because he calculated that from the 7th of Adar to the 13th of Adar, how many days is that?
Six
days. Adayim b'tochimei e'avelu shel Moshe. In other words, that he thought that if we make this calculation, then the 13th of Adar is going to be auspicious for us against the Jewish people because it's the avelus of Moshe Rabbeinu. Oh. But here we have a problem. Why? Because we have halacha called Netzachama, HaNetzachama shel Yom HaShvi. What does that mean? With daybreak on the 7th day of Avelus, Batla Gzeras Shiva. And that's a Shulchan Aruch in Yoredeya, and so forth and so on. So the Avel gets up and terminates his Avelus with daybreak on the 7th day, which would be which would be as soon as we get into Yud Gimel. Now, the Shach says the following. That halacha that we can terminate the Avelus with daybreak of the seventh day of Avelus, that only applies if there are Menachamim. In other words, there are people who are coming on the seventh day to be Menachem. So we finish the Avelus with that Nechama. And as soon as the last Menachem leaves, that's when the Avelus terminates and they get up from Shiva. Now, if we got to Moshe Rabbeinu, there were no Menachemim. How do we know this, says the Beis Levi? Because the Pasuk says that Kol Yisrael were Avel for 30 days. For 30 days, the gods of Klal Yisrael were in a state of mourning. And therefore, if that be the case, then we're back to our question. Why? Because we have no way of extending the Avelus beyond Netzach Hamad, the seventh day. We can only extend the Avelus, says the Shach, if there are Menachemim. If there's no Menachemim, then immediately, with Netzach Hamad of the 13th, of in this case it would be the 13th of Adar, at that point, there's no Avelus. So if Haman was excited because he realized that Yud Gimel is the seventh day of Avelus, is the last day of Avelus, that's going to be a problem because there is no Avelus on Yud Gimel. Therefore, the Gemara says that Haman made a mistake. He thought that Moshe Rabbeinu died on the 8th of Adar. Why? Because when you use the word Chodesh, the word Chodesh could mean two things. It could mean 30 days or it could be 31 days. In the Lashon B'nai Adam, most people, when they use the word Chodesh, they identify that as 30 days. Now, how do we get the calculation that Moshe Rabbeinu died on the seventh day of Adar? This is based on the fact that 3 days after the 30 days of Bechi and Avelus on Moshe Rabbeinu, they crossed the Yarden, which is on the 10th of Nisan. Correct? Because as soon as the Avelus ended, they waited 3 days, they prepared to cross the Yarden. Oh, now, the question is, what is Chodesh Adar? Is Chodesh Adar Chaser, or is it Mole? Chodesh Adar turned out to be Chaser. And in that calculation, 30 days of Avel Moshe begin on the 7th of Adar, as the Gemara says in Kiddushin. Right. But Haman understood that the Chodesh is 30 days, and according to that Cheshbon, the 33rd day, it shall Lamed Gimel Yom Lifnei Yud B'Nisan. And therefore, it comes out that Moshe Rabbeinu, if you make the calculation backwards, he died on the 8th of Adar. And if he died on the 8th of Adar, then it comes out that the 13th of Adar is still during the Yemei Avelus. That's what the Gemara wants to tell us here when it emphasizes Lo Yodea Shebeshiva Badar Mes, because according to Haman's calculation, going backwards from the time that they crossed the Yarden and the 3 days preparation and the 30 days of Avelus, it comes out that he died on the 8th of Adar. Again, if we had more time, we'd go through all the calculations over and over again. Right. But Ube Emes, in truth, Haman made a mistake. That, in fact, Moshe Rabbeinu died on the 7th Adar, not on the 8th of Adar. Nimtza, Kfar Tamu Shiva Simei Avelus by the 13th, because with daybreak, there's no longer Avelus. So therefore, Haman was happy because he made a mistake thinking that it is still within the framework of Avelus, and the bad mazel for Klal Yisrael continues from the day of the death of Moshe Rabbeinu on the 8th till the termination of Avelus on the 13th, including the 13th. Whereas the truth was that Moshe Rabbeinu had died a day earlier based on this calculation,
right.
And therefore the 13th was already outside and beyond the pale of Avelus. There's a lot more here, but this is where we make a siyum. As I said before, we'll have schnapps and we'll go on in life and we'll start the second. Okay then?
Okay.
All right.